Welcome back to the Reverse Autoimmune Disease Summit Series, everybody. Of course, this is the autoimmune brain that you're joining me for, and I'm so delighted to bring to you Dr. Cleopatra, who is the fertility strategist and executive director of the Fertility and Pregnancy Institute. She's a scientist and university professor who pioneered the field of fertility biohacking and creating super babies. To date, Dr. Cleopatra has scientifically studied tens of thousands of women and families, and has helped women in 18 countries on 6 continents have their super babies. She's received nearly $3 million in grant funding and has been cited in over 1,000 scientific studies over the past 5 years alone. She teaches women to use the perimester, the magical and powerful window of opportunity before pregnancy, when we literally have the power to change the quality and expression of the genetics that we pass down to our babies and grandbabies to create their super babies. Welcome to the series, Dr. Cleopatra.
Thanks, Dr. Keisha. It's great to be here with you.
So I was saying off camera that this might sound like sort of a strange marriage of topics, you know, fertility and the autoimmune brain. But, you know, you and I both know it's not at all a strange pairing. And so when I say the word or the phrase autoimmune brain, what comes up for you?
So it's really interesting. It's actually very natural for us to think about autoimmunity, both arms of the immune system, when it comes to fertility. And we think of fertility as a complex network, like the neural network in the brain. Just like the neural network in the brain, our fertility has plasticity. And we represent that fertility complex network as the fertility pyramid, which consists of 5 levels. And the 3rd level, right in the middle of the pyramid, is neuroimmunological, having to do with the brain and the immune system. And as I said, both arms of immunity and autoimmunity. And every day we're working with women and couples who are overcoming fertility challenges and conditions of subfertility because of autoimmune disorders.
So, you know, I always am fascinated with how each of us got to our specialty in medicine. And so I don't know your backstory. So I would love to hear how you got to be interested in this.
Yes, such a good question. And I get asked this question often because I think people assume that if you're working in fertility and if you're helping people overcome fertility challenges, then more than likely that was a something that you experienced personally. And I have to say that with tremendous appreciation and gratitude that fertility and pregnancy and babies are the thing that have come easiest to me in life. And I'm like I said, I'm so grateful for that. But I think it's because I do this work, and I've been doing this work for 24 years now, which is more than half of my life. I just turned 42, and I lost my own mother at birth. And that very rocky and difficult start to life left me with a very profound understanding of how painful it is when reproduction doesn't go well. And I became obsessed with reproduction by the age of 5 or 6. And I was informally observing and studying women in their pregnancies, and then formally began doing this work a month after my 18th birthday. I went into a pregnancy laboratory at the University of Miami, started developing what is now called the Primester, and specifically the Primester protocol, which is the system that we use during the Primester, the time leading up to conception, when we can use the power of epigenetics to change the quality and expression of the genes that we pass down to our babies and grandbabies. That's how we make our super babies. It's not that we're creating designer babies. When we make our super babies, when we get to have our super babies, it means that we get to have the healthiest, happiest, brightest, most well-adjusted baby that we can have based on our genome in combination with our epigenome and that of the other person supplying DNA for our babies. And I obviously used the Primester protocol for myself, having my own babies later on in my reproductive span. I got pregnant on the first try with each of my babies. And planned for them to be born in the month of March, and they were born right before my 35th and 37th and 40th birthday. So I am a quote unquote older mom. Mm-hmm.
I know. We're called geriatric mothers.
Right.
OBGYN world when we're older, right?
Totally. And I'm campaigning for baby number 4, so we'll see if my husband gets on board with that idea. And then I'll be almost 44 by the time we have baby number 4 if we decide to go for her. So
yeah. So I planned my babies, and I have 4 of them, and I had 2 boys and 2 girls. And as I was popping them out, my mother looked at me and she said, "My gosh, like ever since you were tiny playing house, you always had 2 boys and 2 girls. I do not understand how you're doing this," you know? And it was just very intentional for me. I'm now having 2 boys and 2 girls, right?
Yeah.
And then when I was done, I had my tubes tied and I asked my husband to have a mastectomy, and my OBGYN said, "That's a little bit like wearing a belt and suspenders." I said, "Perfect. One breaks, the other one's in place."
You are not playing around. You weren't playing around the way you designed having them, and then
exactly.
The way you designed being finished having children. I love that so much. And I think I probably referred to baby number 4 as a girl, because I presume that if we have a baby number 4, she'll be a girl so that we can have a sister for our daughter.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Right. And I did a ton of study to find out how to create the gender of each child, and followed those little, you know, how to determine the gender of your child or the sex of your child. I read that book and I did everything it said, and sure enough.
It worked for you. Yeah.
Yeah. This idea that there's a, you know, a trimester. Can you explain that? Because I think this is more important now than it ever has been in terms of getting your body ready, detoxing all the chemicals that have stored up in our lymphatic and our breast tissue. We've never had a more toxic world than the one we're living in today. And so talk about this, because these same toxins that are being built up in our tissues also influence autoimmune flares, of course.
Yes. Dr. Keisha, you asked such an important question and you said such an important thing. So I'm excited to talk about the trimester, because I want to make sure that everybody in the world knows about the trimester so that they can take advantage of it. And that's our mission at the Fertility and Pregnancy Institute. But I want to underscore something you said, which is that it's never been more important to take a trimester. And we work with a lot of women and couples who are experiencing fertility challenges. In fact, that's the vast majority of our clients experiencing very, very difficult journeys with their fertility. But we do have some couples who come to us simply to biohack their fertility and their super babies, to trimester, to do everything that they can to prepare mentally and physically and epigenetically for having their super babies. So they're being proactive, but they don't have any reason to expect that they're going to have challenges. And I get the question often, well, can't we just have sex and have a baby? And my answer to that question is yes, absolutely. You can just have sex and have a baby. That's how it's been done since the beginning of time. However, we live in a very different world today. And the reality is that in the world that we live in today, for the first time in the history of the Western world, the life expectancy is declining as opposed to increasing. We have epidemics of obesity and type 2 diabetes and metabolic syndrome in general, and also Alzheimer's and other kinds of dementias. And what's very important to know is that these epidemics that we now face and their resultant impact on average life expectancy were put into motion decades ago, generations ago, in our parents' generation and their trimester with us, and in our grandparents' generation and their trimester with them. And that's not to put blame on anybody, because we all do the very best we can with the information and the resources we have. But today we know better. We've only had the field of epigenetics for 35 years, but this field has taught us how much control we have over our health and well-being and our fertility and our longevity. And we want to make the most out of that control that we have to shape our gene expression in the trimester. That's what allows us to overcome fertility challenges and conditions of subfertility, especially those that are associated with reproductive aging, which is something that we're facing more and more because we're staying in school longer. We're focusing on our careers longer. It's taking longer to meet our partners, to become financially stable enough to feel like we're ready to have children. All of those things, we're waiting until later, but then we also have the compound impact of this burdensome environment that we live in terms of our toxic exposures, both the physiological ones and the emotional and mental ones. And so this cumulative impact means that we are seeing people, and both men and women, age reproductively at a much faster rate if they are not intentionally slowing and stopping that process. And so it is critical that we understand that the trimester, as you said, is more important than it ever has been in the history of the human population, and that we want to take advantage of this window of opportunity. So what is the trimester? The trimester is the 120 plus days leading up to conception. And it is truly one of the most magical and important windows of opportunity we will ever have as human beings. Because during this period of time, through the process of epigenetics, epigenetic modification, and then what will become epigenetic inheritance for our super babies and our super grandbabies, we can literally change the expression of the genes that we're passing down. And we know that epigenetic inheritance passes at least two generations, is handed down across at least two generations.
We've actually seen up to 12 generations in studies.
Yes, I was going to say, we think it's much more than that, but what has most commonly been studied thus far is two generations. And it's so critical to me that we know that we study for the SAT and we prepare before we go in and take the SAT. And we spend tons of time and money planning our wedding day. And we even take lots of time to plan outfits for special occasions that are much, much less important than getting pregnant and having our babies. We train for marathons for months before we actually run them. We don't just wake up one day and decide we're going to go out and run a marathon that day. And why wouldn't we put at least that much trimestering, at least that much preparation into what will become our babies and our grandbabies? Not only is it one of the most important legacies that we could leave for future generations, one of the most important imprints that we could leave for future generations of our own family, but it's also one of the highest forms of activism available to us on the planet.
You know, one of the things that you're pointing to is in men, we have lower sperm motility, morphology, and count.
Yes.
Right? Yep. And so whenever we talk about fertility, I think a lot of times women kind of move into the space of, oh, I've got to get my body ready, you know, but when we look at what the data is in industrialized countries right now with men, this trimester period is not just for the woman.
You're so right, Dr. Keisha. The trimester is not just the work of women. It is the work of all people, of all genders. And you are absolutely right that in the last 40 years, we've seen more than a 50% decline in male fertility, including sperm count. Now, fortunately, there's a wide range of what's considered normal levels of sperm count by the World Health Organization. So the average male is still within that normal level of sperm count. But if that rate of decline continued, it would rapidly be the case that men on average would fall out of the normative levels of sperm count. And also, these studies were conducted on men who were considered fertile. So this is not including the people who are most at risk for fertility challenges. Mm-hmm. And it, and we think that it, this is the product of modern life, that a lot of the things that we were just talking about. And I do think that in the Western world, in America, where I live, and I assume where you live also, Dr. Keisha, and really every culture and society with which I'm familiar, and I have scientifically studied many of them, that when we talk about fertility and fertility challenges, the first instinct is always to think about a female, to look at the woman. If there's a fertility challenge present, if it's taking longer than desired or expected to get pregnant, people look at the woman first. I feel like that's just instinct. And what people don't know is that fertility challenges are equally likely to originate in the male, female, and at the couple level. And then approximately 10% are considered unexplained fertility challenges. There's a very specific reason why I don't use the term infertility. We never use that at the Fertility and Pregnancy Institute. And I can talk about that in just a second. But, and I should say, I've divided the fertility challenges into four categories: the male, female, couple level, and then unexplained. We don't have scientific data that speak to other genders specifically. So I don't mean to be, exclude anyone from the conversation when I use those labels. I'm just speaking about what we know from scientific studies and from scientific data. At the Fertility and Pregnancy Institute, we work with all humans, and all humans are welcome and celebrated, and all formations of family and love are welcome and celebrated with us. But when I speak from data, usually it's male, female. So we know that some proportion of those 10% unexplained fertility challenges are likely to also be at the couple level. What's happening at the couple level is that the way two people combine for one reason or another is creating conditions of subfertility. So it may be that either person on their own has pretty average fertility, but somehow they combine is not pushing them over that threshold of subfertility. And it could be that if they were combined with somebody else, that they would never even experience fertility challenges. They would never know about conditions of subfertility because the combination would push them over that threshold. And I want to share data from a study that I think really drives the point home about how important the male contribution is in the trimester and in trimester epigenetics, which is what we are focused on to overcome fertility challenges and also to create our super babies and super grandbabies. This is in an animal model. So this is with male mice. And this study exposed male mice to the scent of cherry blossom, and then paired the scent of cherry blossom with an electric shock, so that the male mice developed an intense fear of the scent of cherry blossom, kind of like Pavlov's dog. If something gets paired, if two things get paired together, then if you experience one of them, you automatically expect that the other one is coming. So the male mice became afraid of the scent of the cherry blossom. And they then mated those male mice. And those male mice had pups and grandpups. And their pups and grandpups all demonstrated fear of the scent of cherry blossom, even though they had never experienced the pairing of the scent of cherry blossom with the electric shock. It became embedded in their DNA, in their epigenome, as epigenetic marks or tags that were passed down. And there we see epigenetic inheritance across three generations in the male mice, their pups, and their grandpups.
This becomes very compelling, you know, when we start talking about emotional health. And in the summit, there have been a lot of experts that have been talking about why it's so important to get underneath your emotional health and wellness when you're talking about the physicality of the expression of your life. And reproduction is no different than any other expression of the physicality. And emotional world actually plays a great big part in this.
Plays a huge part. And I also want to note for people something that most people aren't aware of, which is that our fertility and our broader health and longevity are so intimately tied to one another. In fact, we have data that show that a woman who has children up until her 33rd birthday is twice as likely to live to the age of 90 as a woman who finished having children before the age of 30 or by the age of 30. Because what's happening in our reproductive health is being mirrored in our larger health. Said another way, our reproductive health is a window into other aspects of our health that are going to show up later. If you think about it, it makes perfect sense that the reproductive system is the first place in the body where aging shows up. Then it moves on to the cardiometabolic system, then into the brain, et cetera. And so it's really profoundly important to pay attention to our fertility and our biological clock and our reproductive health, both as males and females, even if we never plan to have children, because of its intimate ties that run through the rest of the life course. So that is absolutely correct. And I often get the question, what should I do? Should I do a fertility cleanse? What type of cleanse should I do? And I always want people to understand that it's way easier to clean up what we eat than it is to clean up what we think. And there is no more.
Thank you.
people really like to have a to-do list, especially when they feel out of control. Like,
give me a pill, take that.
Yes. Because people want to feel like they're taking steps forward, and we want those steps forward to come more quickly, more easily. Don't get me wrong. I am the most impatient person in the world. I somehow have developed that muscle for delayed gratification that took me through PhD and postdoc and, you know, doing studies that take years to complete. And even with our families who trimester with us at the Fertility and Pregnancy Institute, we follow them and collect data on them for at least 16 months. So we don't even have our complete success rates for a data period for several years. That definitely takes the ability to delay gratification. And I am super impatient when I want to see something happening in the world and happening in my life. So I completely understand that. But sometimes, a lot of times, the most important work that we do is not as easy to put on our to-do list and cross off. Sometimes it's that excavation, that work that happens little by little. And we really guide you through that in the trimester protocol. And I talked about the fertility pyramid and the five levels. So the base of the pyramid, and this is intentional, very intentional, is the psychosexual level. And then bioecological. This is the level that most people traditionally think about when it comes to fertility, although they have a much more narrow conceptualization of this level than we do. Then, as I said, neuroimmunological, then social and cultural. And really, mental and emotional well-being run throughout each of these. But what's so important about the psychosexual level is that we know that the same brain areas that are principally involved in safety and survival are also principally involved in reproduction, the hypothalamus, the pituitary, the amygdala. And so the brain is so wise and is always, 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 first and foremost, going to prioritize our safety and our survival over everything else. That's why when you are living in your fight or flight mode, when you're really stressed, that you're much more likely to catch a cold, because your rest and restore and digest functions are suppressed. They're put on the back burner. You're more likely to catch a cold because your immunity is down, because immunity is highly costly in terms of the resources it requires from your brain and body. The same thing with digestion. And so you might be more likely to have GI problems or a stomach ache when you're stressed, or if you're someone who's chronically stressed, then maybe your stomach just bothers you all the time. Well, guess what? Reproduction is one of these things too. It's one of those rest and restore functions. So just like immunity and digestion, if your brain and body perceive you to not be safe somewhere in your life, your reproduction is going to be put on the back burner. It's going to be much harder statistically to get pregnant and stay pregnant. And that is a critical piece of information that nobody talks about when it comes to our fertility. But here's what's even more critical. When we do start talking about it, automatically people start looking outside of themselves for the things that are stressing them in their lives. And what I want to prompt people to consider is that often the most stressful thing in our lives is what's happening in here. The way that we are talking to ourselves, the way that we are appraising the circumstances of our lives, criticizing ourselves, the circumstances of our lives, instead of feeling appreciation for where we are and where we're going. And I think it's really important to start there, because when we get this under control and our self-talk and our constant babble about the circumstances of our lives is much more loving and much more kind, our central nervous system gets to settle way down. We get to spend more time in the parasympathetic nervous system, where the rest and digest and restore functions can happen and be prioritized. And this is really important for autoimmune disorders and diseases as well. And, you know, we have so many women who have ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease and multiple sclerosis and, you know, thyroid, Hashimoto's. Like, it's just every day these things seem to be becoming more and more prevalent.
They are.
And there's, you know, you could take all the steps and eat all the right things. And if you're still beating yourself up inside, I think it's very hard to overcome those symptoms and those root causes.
Impossible, actually.
Yeah. Yes.
Because, so you guys, this is the second doctor telling you this. My PhD is in this, Dr. Cleopatra. So I have a PhD in sexology, and my study was the healing unresolved trauma study. And it was this very thing. I mapped all the PET scans and fMRI scans of brains and saw that everything that's required for a woman to feel sexual desire are the same parts of the brain that are hijacked when they have PTSD. And, you know, you always are going to opt for survival over reproduction, because if you're a zebra being chased by a lion, that zebra knows, I can't keep you alive. How am I going to keep anything else alive? So we are just shutting that down. Thank you. Right. Yeah. And we go to survival. So this is such an important piece. And it's why I brought it into autoimmunity, was because that hypervigilant brain, right? The hypervigilant mind makes a hypervigilant immune system. And when you have a hypervigilant immune system, you're also not going to be able to conceive and carry a baby to a healthy end. Right. And so this is the inner nourishment of beyond what you're putting in your mouth. It's what you're generating here inside of your perceptual field.
Yes. Dr. Keisha, it's so important. So many things you said that I want to highlight. And I'm so glad you brought up sexual arousal, and I want to talk about that in just a second. But the other thing that I want to say is for people listening who have experienced stress and trauma, intergenerational current, those things do live inside of us. And having that hype, they become embedded in our biology and in our genome, our epigenome. And through these same epigenetic processes, just counterproductive ones that I was talking about, that we use the flip side of that in the primester. Mm-hmm. But what I wanted to say is that you might have a hypervigilant brain that's creating a hypervigilant immune system, and you might beat yourself up over that. Mm-hmm. And I want you to know that it may be very sensible and adaptive that you have a hypervigilant brain. If you grew up in circumstances that were dangerous, if you were abused, if you're a person of color who was constantly experiencing discrimination, if you didn't have enough money and your family was getting evicted all the time.
It's what the wise mind of the child did at its skill set and developmental level at the time and kept you alive.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. And so I want you to know that if that's the case for you, then you're so smart and your brain is so smart. And now the trick is, now that your circumstances are different, how do you get to be different? How do you get to reprogram your brain, rewire your brain, let your immune system and your nervous system know that you are safe. How do you not keep reliving the trauma that you've experienced? And it's really, we know that women who experience high adversity in childhood are much more likely to experience fertility challenges in adulthood. That's no surprise. And at the same time, if you're listening and that describes your childhood and also describes the condition of your fertility today, I want you to know that it doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to continue to be that way. I had such a rocky, scary, chaotic, unpredictable childhood. And really the chaotic experiences of my life were still with me even when I was first starting to do this amazing work that I do. Up until I would say probably my 25th year, I was still dealing with completely ridiculous things that I shouldn't have.
35 before I finally. Yeah. Good for you for getting on it earlier. Thank
you. Oh, I wasn't playing around. I was trying, but I had a lot of baggage I had to shed.
You know, I had to get rheumatoid arthritis before I woke up and said, "Oh, I think there's something I have to examine about me here and how I respond."
Oh, I'm so sorry, but
it went away within 6 months of doing this work.
Yeah, and it was the catalyst for where you are. It's so interesting because we have a lot of mamas who share that. In couples who share that as much as they wish they didn't have fertility challenges, they are grateful to those challenges because it brought them to the trimester and to this work that changed every part of their lives so much, and that they continue to live the trimester life for the rest of their life. And they never would have found it if they hadn't been looking for a solution to their fertility challenges. Shanda Sumter is one of our clients, and she and her husband, and she talks so openly about that, which is why I say her name and I share that, because we usually wouldn't speak publicly about a specific person. But she has said that many times, that as much as I didn't want to, you know, take longer to get pregnant with our second baby, I'm so glad that I found this work and I did this. I get to live this way for the rest of my life.
Right. Right. This is really so important. And part of the program that goes with the summit is a program that I put together that's healing trauma through the chakra system. And it goes through every level, you know, 7 different layers of how this runs through every piece, from cells to genetics to also you programming your next life, like how that looks, right? So the next chapters of your life and working with who are you going to be when you draw your last breath in this body on this planet, like what you're doing right now and healing this little one is actually influencing that one. You know, time's not linear. It's all together in one compressed capsule. We have access to the one that was conceived and the one that will die in this form. Mm-hmm. They're all right here. You know, quantum physics tells us that it's not linear. So when you spend the time to really do this healing, you're actually affecting the quality of your own being as well as the being of babies that are coming and grandchildren. So it's so important. It's everything.
I can't think of anything more important to do than to set up our babies and our grandbabies for having this incredible epigenetic foundation. And otherwise, I mean, we think we think of this all the time. Like, we want to pass down a legacy, a family business. We want to pass down a certain amount of money. We want to pass down a certain amount of real estate. There's no more valuable real estate than the healthiest epigenome that we can give to our babies, so that if we have experienced intergenerational trauma or stress, or, you know, the current trauma and stress, that we say, I'm the line in the sand. Yeah. Like, it stops with me. And that was such a huge commitment for me and for my husband going into having children. And I won a big award, this morning I was jumping. Thank you. I was jumping up and down, and then I started crying because I felt so sad. I thought my parents would be so proud of me. They are so proud of me. They're not here, and they both died basically because of poverty and health disparities. And I cried because I thought of all the things that they never got to have or experience. And then I cried because of all the things I get to have and experience, and all the things my babies get to have and experience, and our grandbabies. And I just feel so grateful for that, that, you know, in one generation, it's so vastly different. I mean, you know, I make more in a day than my dad made in a year. You know, sometimes I make more in an hour. Mm-hmm. And it's just, and I mean, that's such a small example, but it just tells you what profound transformation can happen in a generation when we are so deliberate about that, and we pour into it and we go all in on it, but we don't do it from a place of struggle. We can do it from a place of love and ease and positive expectancy, and that makes you bringing our babies about and everything else about much easier.
Beautifully said. And I just want to, you know, offer some compassion around what you just said and note it, and just presence also that rather than feeling sad for your parents, I feel a great deal of joy because the pebble they dropped in the water has this ripple effect, right? Mm-hmm. And of course they're with you and they are proud of you, and look at what they have done, right?
Thank you so much. My husband says that every day, like, yeah. You know, when I say how, you know, if I cry because of how the conditions under which my father passed away, you know, 40 years after my mother, but still in, you know, difficult conditions, my husband will say to me, your dad was the richest man I ever knew. He has five amazing children who have gone out to do incredible things in the world. And I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
That's so very true. You know, and it's just being able to witness, not from a limited perspective of money being that, but something much larger, right?
Yeah.
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 Is there anything that I haven't asked you that you really want our listeners to know before we say goodbye?
Yes, I do. I want our listeners to know that, just like you were talking about sexual arousal and the links to the brain, that pleasure, and especially physical pleasure, is one of the most direct ways to soothing the nervous system, to soothing the immune system. And it's also one of the most direct pathways to our fertility. We know that women who have orgasms during heterosexual intercourse get pregnant more quickly and easily. And we think that there may be some factors happening in the brain. For example, the amygdala, which is associated with fear and worry, goes quiet during orgasm. It's one of the only times that it goes quiet, and it doesn't happen if someone's faking an orgasm. So it's a true letting go that happens. Yeah, that is probably so soothing to the entire fertility system through the central nervous system and other pathways. So that's probably one thing. But what we know even more clearly is that female orgasm creates uterine contractions that propel the sperm forward on these microscopic superhighways created by our fertile cervical fluid, which makes the journey, the very long and hard journey that the sperm have to make to the egg, much, much easier. So really,
no turbo boost.
Yeah, exactly. So I really, really believe and just want to encourage you that treat for pleasure as if your fertility depends on it, because it does.
Take your vagina to the gym, ladies. What I always say. I have a book coming out by that title.
I love it. To the gym. That is so good. I can't see it. That's awesome.
All right. Well, thank you for spending the time just sharing a tiny bit of your wisdom with us, Dr. Cleopatra. It has been a delight and an education for everybody. Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Keisha.
All right. Until next time, everyone, be well.